The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mark Newman from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall share with you information from various medical sources. The People's Pharmacy, Joe and Teresa Graydon. Student's curved penis interferes with love life. Question. I am a 21-year-old college student with an embarrassing problem. I have dated some beautiful young women, but I avoid sexual intimacy because of my curse, quote unquote. I suffer from Peyronie's disease. My penis curves to the left when I am aroused. Is there anything that can be done to correct this problem? Answer. We applaud you for seeking help for this condition. Many men suffer in silence. Peyronie's disease often occurs after some trauma to the penis. The resulting scar tissue can make the penis bend at an angle. The Food and Drug Administration has approved a medication that contains collagenase, an enzyme that breaks down scar tissue. This injectable drug, Xiaflex, spelled X-I-A-F-L-E-X, reduced penile curvature significantly more than placebo injections. If you decide to seek this treatment, treatment, be sure to consult a urologist who has experience utilizing it. Xiaflex injections often are covered by insurance, but they are very expensive, running into thousands of dollars. Side effects may include bleeding, bruising, pain, or itching. In a small number of cases, the injection itself injured the penis. Question. A couple of years ago, I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia. The rheumatologist questioned me about my sleep patterns and prescribed alprazolam at bedtime. The result was dramatic. The fibromyalgia pain disappeared within a few days. Aside from the pain, I am in excellent health at 75 years of age. However, I am concerned about my memory. Does alprazolam cause memory problems? Must I choose between pain relief and memory? A. Answer. Sleep is critical for managing fibromyalgia. This mysterious condition produces pain in soft tissue, frequently associated with tender spots. Fatigue and trouble concentration also are common symptoms. Treatment with a benzodiazepine sedative such as alprazolam or Xanax can pose problems, especially for older people. Such drugs may increase the risk of dementia. That's cited in Expert Opinion on Drug Safety, May 2015. Alprazolam, along with other benzos, is on the list of potentially inappropriate medications for seniors. There are no ideal treatments for fibromyalgia. Doctors prescribe drugs that affect brain chemistry such as Lyrica or Cymbalta and Savella. How should you store extra virgin olive oil? And question. I love olive oil, but have been intimidated about using it. Heating it supposedly breaks down the olive oil and makes it bad for you. In fact, warnings about using rancid oils due to improper storage seem to be popping up all over these days. What can you tell me about the best way to store olive oil? I really want to maintain that robust olive flavor and the health benefits. Answer. Some of the health benefits of olive oil are likely due to the plant compounds called polyphenols, as well as to the monounsaturated fatty acid, or oleic acid, O-L-E-I-C, that predominates. Research has shown that the fats in refined olive oil deteriorate less at temperatures used for pan frying than those in corn, soybean, or sunflower oils, cited in the Journal of Agricultural and Food Chemistry, September 29, 2014. Spanish researchers found that storing high-flavor extra virgin olive oil in plastic under light accelerates the breakdown of the phenolic compounds that give it the taste you treasure, cited in Journal of the American Oil Chemists Society, February 6, 2019. To maintain the best quality, store extra virgin olive oil in dark glass containers, in a dark cupboard, and use it up in less than a year. Question. A patient brought in a copy of a column with a question concerning the use of colocalciferol, which is vitamin D3, and decon mouse poison. Your response totally ignored the context of its use. Decon works by overwhelming a small creature with a very large dose of vitamin D3. A person would not be able to get such a high dose from a dietary supplement. Some researchers think the minimal dose to raise the serum level of vitamin D3 to optimal levels, 70 nanograms per ml, is 9,000 to 10,000 international units per day. Your article scared my patient into stopping her 4,000 IU daily intake. When you report health information out of context, you are doing a disservice to your readers and causing unwarranted concern. Answer, we are sorry that your patient overreacted. As we pointed out, 4,000 IU is considered a safe dose for adults. People can take more than that, but they should do so only under medical supervision and monitoring. People who would like to learn more about supplements in general and vitamin D in particular may be interested in a rigorously researched book, Fortify Your Life, by Dr. Tiarona Low Dog from the Wall Street Journal. The patient ID bracelet gets an overhaul. The pesky but essential hospital ID bracelet is getting a makeover. At hospitals across the country, the wristband bearing a patient's name and date of birth is going high-tech or super sleek, and if some doctors have their druthers, it will disappear altogether. Critics say ID bracelets collect germs and can be hard to read, leading to mistakes. They can fall off and get lost, while high-tech wristbands allow hospitals to track patients at all times. Some doctors say the best bracelet is none at all. Peter Constantino has spent 3 years developing a substitute. Dr. Constantino, chairman of head and neck surgery at Lenox Hill Hospital in New York, came up with a shield-shaped adhesive strip that can be stuck almost anywhere on the body, called the Shield. It is being tested at Lenox Hill, a part of Northwell Health, on 50 neurosurgery patients who also are wearing bracelets. Dr. Costantino's first iteration was an ID tattoo, which he set aside in favor of a thin strip of polyurethane. The shield usually is attached to a patient's arm or foot. It is wider than traditional bracelets, so patient information is more legible, which may reduce the risk of errors, Dr. Costantino said. He plans to test if the shield collects fewer germs than a traditional wristband. Both Costantino and Northwell Health have equity stakes in the company producing the shield. Dr. Costantino's wife, Lori, inspired the invention, he said. For Mrs. Costantino, who spent time in the hospital for complications from brain cancer surgery, the ID made a miserable situation worse. The wristband always makes you feel that you are sick, that you are a patient, she said. Paul Allen, a pediatrician at Children's Mercy Hospital in Kansas City, Missouri, also wants to scrap the bracelet. Kids, especially the younger ones, hate it, he said. It is not uncommon for me to go in, and there is an 18-month-old, and they grab their bracelet saying, off, 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 off. Dr. Allen and two partners developed Bodyguard ID, a temporary cosmetic ink that prints the patient information directly on the skin. It is not irritating, and the kids can't pull it off, he said. Last year, the Bodyguard ID developers won a $15,000 innovation prize from Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City and used some of it to apply for a patent, Dr. Allen said. They want to develop the device and make sure it can work safely on a large scale. The hospital ID bracelet is perhaps not the sexiest piece of technology, said Darren Dworkin, chief information officer at Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles, but it serves a real safety purpose in complex healthcare organizations. Some hospitals are souping up their bracelets with new powers. You are taking the same old wristband and making it smarter, said Adam Peck, a vice president of GenTrack, a Newtown, Pennsylvania company that helps hospitals incorporate technology into wristbands. St. Joseph Mercy Oakland Hospital in Pontiac, Michigan, added CenTrack technology to bracelets to monitor patients' whereabouts. You can track the patient from the time they arrive to the time they leave, says Robert Jones, head of information technology. With a few clicks on a computer, a staffer can locate a patient anywhere in the hospital. When a patient is discharged, the hospital knows and can fill the vacancy. Wake Forest Baptist Hospital in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, uses tech-enhanced bracelets to make sure cancer patients get enough exercise after surgery. We measure the times they move from the room to the hall, and we can identify how many times a day they do that and how long they are out of the room, says Betsy Kraft, the clinical project manager helping oversee the wristbands, which are made by Centrac. To assuage possible patient concerns about such scrutiny, the devices don't track time in the bathroom, the hospital says. Even fans of newfangled bracelets have their complaints. Linda Laskowski Jones runs emergency and trauma services at Christiana Care Health System in Wilmington, Delaware. The emergency room there issues patients with wristbands as well as separate tags that have tracking technology linked to the information on the band. The tag with Centrac technology is clipped to the front of the patient's gown. If a family wants to know where a loved one is, we can say, oh, your husband is getting a CT scan, Ms. Laskowski Jones said. The low-tech ID wristbands don't conk out during power outages or computer crashes, she says, making them a fail-safe. From the Mayo Clinic Health Letter, spinal stenosis, painful nerve compression. It began with an occasional burning pain that started in your buttocks and ran down your legs. Now you're noticing discomfort and weakness in that area if you walk more than a block or two. Thankfully, the pain goes away when you sit, but it's still frustrating. The normal wear and tear effects of aging frequently lead to back pain. One common cause is a narrowing of the spinal canal or spinal stenosis. Fortunately, a number of treatments may help keep you on your feet. A narrowed canal, the bones or vertebrae in your spine from the central spinal canal, which protects the spinal cord, the primary connection between your brain and your peripheral nervous system. This central spinal canal runs from your neck to your lower back. Some people are born with a spinal canal that's narrower than usual. But most commonly, spinal canal narrowing, or stenosis, occurs later in life, especially after the age of 50. This is often due to osteoarthritis of the spine, which may prompt the formation of bone spurs that protrude into the spinal canal. Degeneration or herniation of the shock-absorbing discs between the spinal vertebrae may press into the spinal canal, as can a thickening of the ligaments supporting the spine. Less common causes of spinal stenosis include spinal injuries, tumors, and Paget's disease, a disease that causes bone overgrowth. Stenosis most often occurs in the lower back or lumbar spinal stenosis, but it can also occur in the neck or cervical spinal stenosis. Pain and weakness. Cervical stenosis puts pressure on the spinal cord. Lumbar stenosis compresses the spinal nerve roots that pass through the spine to the rest of your body. Some people may not notice symptoms, while others may gradually experience increasing discomfort. In the lower back, stenosis may cause symptoms such as numbness or tingling in feet or legs, weakness in feet or legs, pain or cramping in the legs when standing for prolonged periods of walking, a pain that usually eases upon sitting or bending forward, such as when pushing a shopping cart. In the neck, stenosis may result in numbness or tingling in a hand, arm, foot, or leg, weakness in a hand, arm, foot, or leg, and problems with walking and balance. To diagnose spinal stenosis, your doctor may ask you about your medical history and any symptoms, as well as conduct an examination. Imaging tests, such as X-ray, magnetic resonance imaging, or MRI, or computerized tomography, CT, may be used to look for changes or damage to your spine. Non-surgical relief. There's no easy cure for spinal stenosis. However, you can take steps to relieve symptoms, including, number one, physical activity. Regular exercise is a critical step in easing pain and improving your ability to move. This usually involves a regimen that mixes stretching, core muscle strengthening, and aerobic exercises. Initially, a physical therapist can demonstrate specific lumbar stretching and core strengthening exercises. From there, you may be able to gradually add low-impact aerobic activity, such as swimming or using a stationary bike. Weight loss. Losing excess weight, ideally with a combination of diet and exercise, can help reduce the stress on your spine. Gait aids, G-A-I-T. While working on other efforts to find relief, you may find that using a cane or walker reduces pain. These devices allow you to lean forward while walking, which may improve your mobility. Pain-relieving medications. To start, these often involve non-prescription options such as Tylenol or Advil and Motrin IV or Aleve. However, these drugs are usually recommended only for short-term use to minimize side effect risks. Longer-term prescription drugs for pain most often include anti-seizure drugs such as Neurontin, Horizont, and others, and Lyrica, or the antidepressant drug Cymbalta. Your doctor can help you weigh the risks and benefits of the various medication options and help you make the best choice. Injections. Injecting a corticosteroid or anesthetic medication into the area where the nerve is being compressed can help reduce inflammation and relieve pain. The duration of effectiveness varies and may be based on your level of inflammation. Injections may be limited to only a few times a year in order to prevent any steroid-related weakening of the nearby bones and connective tissues. Integrative therapies, acupuncture, chiropractic care, and massage may be worth exploring for pain relief. Decompression surgery. If these more conservative measures fail to provide enough relief, surgical options may be considered. Surgery may also be recommended if you're experiencing significant disability from your symptoms. The most common surgical procedure for spinal stenosis is a laminectomy, also known as decompression surgery. With this procedure, the back portion, or the lamina, of the affected vertebrae is removed, creating more space around the compressed nerves. If you have significant spinal instability, laminectomy may be followed by spinal fusion surgery, in which two or more vertebrae are permanently connected together to better support the spine. Another surgical option is laminotomy, in which only a portion of the lamina is removed. This is often done by creating a hole just big enough to relieve pressure in a single spot. For cervical spinal stenosis, another procedure is laminoplasty. With this, space is created within the spinal canal by creating a hinge on the lamina. Metal hardware is then used to bridge the gap in the open section of the spine. These procedures often involve a hospital stay, often 1 to 2 nights for laminectomy alone, to 3 to 4 nights for laminectomy with fusion. The procedures also carry risks, such as infection, nerve injury, and complications related to general anesthesia. While these procedures have been shown to improve pain and movement, some weakness may linger, particularly if you've had long-term symptoms. Less invasive options. Although laminectomy continues to be the primary advanced treatment for spinal stenosis, less invasive techniques have been developed in recent years. Although limited in use, these procedures may effectively relieve symptoms with less risk than standard surgery. They include minimally invasive lumbar decompression. For some people, stenosis may be caused by a thickened ligament in the back of the spine. With this procedure, also known as percutaneous image guiding guided lumbar decompression. Needle-like instruments are used to remove a portion of the ligament to increase space. The procedure is performed without the need for general anesthesia. Next, spacer implantation. Spacers, also known as interspinous process devices, can be inserted into the back of the spine. They bring the spine into a more forward-bending position or flexion, giving more room to the nerves. Limited bone is removed, and the procedure may be done under local anesthesia. You may be a candidate for spacer implantation if the buttock or leg pain you experience from stenosis is relieved when you sit or bend forward. However, in many cases, interspinous spacers may not be a good long-term solution, as they often shift position and may even lead to fractures. In addition, the long-term durability of these spacers is unknown and requires further investigation. In addition to these procedures, both stem cell and platelet-rich plasma injections are being studied as treatments for back pain caused by degenerative disease. It remains to be seen how these newer approaches may be used as alternatives to surgery. Health tips: blister care. When a water blister develops, the first step is to avoid what caused it. Then it's a matter of protecting the blister until your skin heals. However, if you have a condition that makes wound healing difficult, see your doctor. If the blister isn't too painful, leave the fluid-filled bubble intact. Unbroken skin over a blister is a natural barrier to infection. Protect an intact blister by covering it with a bandage. If more protection is needed, cut a piece of thicker cushion padding, such as moleskin, into a donut shape and place the pad so it encircles the blister. The pad can then be covered by a breathable bandage. For a painful blister, you can drain the blister with these steps. Number one, clean. Wash your hands and the blister site with a soft soap and warm water. Swab the blister area with rubbing alcohol or iodine and sterilize a clean needle the same way. Two, puncture the blister. Using the sterilized needle, poke a few holes near the blister edge. Let the fluid drain, but keep the skin covering otherwise intact as a protective barrier. Next, protect the blister. Apply an ointment such as petroleum jelly or zinc oxide and cover the blister with a bandage. And then finally, keep an eye on things. Check the blister each day for signs of infection and seek medical care if an infection appears to be developing. You can usually cut away the dead skin after a few days using a pair of sterilized tweezers and scissors. News and our views. A promising treatment for certain breast cancers. Breast cancer comes in several forms, and one of the most aggressive forms with fewer treatment options is triple-negative breast cancer. Recently, Mayo Clinic researchers found that the hormone estradiol, E-S-T-R-A-D-I-O-L, available in drug form Estrace, may have a new use in certain subset of women with triple-negative breast cancer. Triple-negative breast cancer accounts for 10 to 20% of all breast cancers. It gets the name because it lacks three particular receptors on or inside the cancer cells: estrogen receptor alpha, progesterone receptor, and human epidermal growth factor receptor 2. Various breast cancer drugs treatments are used to target these receptors. Without those receptors, treatment options for triple-negative breast cancer are mainly limited to surgery, chemotherapy, and radiation. These can be effective and curative. However, there are few options for women with residual cancer cells after treatment, meaning recurrence rates for these women are high. In addition, nearly all women with triple-negative cancer that has spread or metastasized beyond the breast eventually die of the disease. Mayo Clinic researchers discovered that about 25% of those with triple-negative breast cancer have another cell receptor called estrogen receptor beta. Estradiol actually inhibits the growth of triple-negative breast cancer with estrogen receptor beta, including growth and proliferation of metastasized cells. It's an unexpected discovery since estradiol stimulates cancer growth in breast cancer with estrogen receptor alpha. So far, these discoveries have been made in the laboratory, a trial of estradiol therapy in women who have metastatic triple-negative breast cancer with estrogen receptor beta is planned. Mayo Clinic doctors and researchers are hopeful that this familiar available drug will provide an avenue of hope for women who previously had limited treatment options. Device produces cellular solution for burn healing. Burn wounds can be difficult to treat. Moderate to severe burns that extend deep into the skin are prone to serious complications and require prompt treatment. But a new device called the RECELL, R-E-C-E-L-L, system provides a treatment option that may speed recovery and improve outcomes for serious burns. The system uses a small sample of the individual's healthy skin to create a mixture of enough cells, including stem cells, to regenerate a healthy and much larger layer of outer skin. Two clinical trials showed that burns treated with the RECELL system required substantially less donor skin, 32 to 97.5% less, than did standard burn care involving skin grafting. The RECELL system can generate in as little as 30 minutes enough cellular mixture to cover burn areas up to 80 times the size of the donor sample. However, precautions indicated should be used only on an individual burns up to 125 square inches, a little larger than a standard sheet of office paper, or for people with burns on less than 20% of their bodies. The RECELL system was given pre-market approval by the Food and Drug Administration in September 2018. Other similar technologies are under investigation. Mayo Clinic experts look forward to seeing how this new technology impacts burn care. A few of my toenails have turned a yellowish color and seem to have thickened. Is there anything I can do to fix this? And we'll start with this answer. What you're likely to experience is a fungal nail infection. Yes, treatments are available, although they may take some vigilance. And we will continue this next week on health issues, because we have run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mark Newman, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time, and if you have any comment or questions, please call 919-832-5138 and stay healthy.